Come out! The Black Panther is ready for you!
Hello and welcome to the podcast that is strongly in favor of Martin Freeman popping up in more Marvel movies. It's Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, is a man who lives in a secluded country cut off from the rest of the world that is secretly more advanced than any other.
Mike Tricchio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
It's good. It's good to be talking to you on my space microphone in my space country.
Yeah. What is the name of your space country, Mike? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, man. You know, you can't just put a guy on the spot like that try to come up with a joke. I also wanted to say Mike Conda, but that sounds like an appropriation thing. So
so maybe avoid that one for sure.
Maybe not make that. Yeah.
If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news and then move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. And then after that, we move on into our featured review. And this week we're discussing a new film from director Ryan Coogler and the 18th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's Black Panther, Mike. Are you excited to dig into Black Panther?
Fuck yes, I am. Dude, it's a Marvel movie. We got at least 3 hours on this.
That's true. Yeah, these are always our longest episodes, and I love doing them, but they're also exhausting.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're excited to dig into Black Panther. This movie made all the money.
Every dollar.
If there was a dollar to be made, Black Panther has it now.
Yep.
Like, even people who didn't see the movie, like, they woke up one day and their wallets were just lighter. Like, they just, because the money had disappeared and gone into Black Panther's box office. So yeah, we're going to be talking about Black Panther quite a bit in a little while, but right now, let's get into some film news. It's time for film news here on Film Bookcast, and we begin with some superhero news, fittingly enough, because this is our Black Panther episode. And I got just a bunch of superhero stories I wanted to get through. I actually have a lot of film news stories to get through in general, so I'm doing this is a pocket of film news stories that I'm just going to throw at you one by
one.
So first up, we talked about that Joker Origins movie that DC's trying to make, right? Todd Phillips directing that, the guy who made The Hangover, produced by Martin Scorsese, of all people, which is weird. And it seems like we might have an actor playing the Joker in that movie now. So, yeah, first of all, it's not Jared Leto, which is...
Hashtag bless.
Yeah, so that's nice, that's nice. And apparently it's going to be Joaquin Phoenix.
Sure.
This just seems really odd. I mean, A, I think Joaquin Phoenix could do an amazing Joker, because I think Joaquin Phoenix is an amazing actor. Like, I think one of the best actors working today. It's just weird to me. that this is even an option.
I am definitely down for a insane Joaquin Phoenix to be the Joker. Weird that he's going to be doing an Origins kind of thing, because he's, like, not a young dude.
Yeah, isn't he? He's got to be older than Jared Leto, right?
I would assume so, but I have no idea, though. That's all. Moving on.
Yeah, no, it is very strange indeed. I remember actually Joaquin Phoenix was in talks to do Doctor Strange before.
Yeah,
that
that's right.
Out too. So he has circled comic book movies in the past, and who knows if this movie will actually come to pass, because DC is just a clusterfuck, as we've talked about many times. For example, Michael Bay may be doing a DC movie, Mike. And if that doesn't shout clusterfuck, I don't know what does.
Yeah. Is it the Black Cat Silver Sable movie?
Nope. That's a Marvel movie, Mike, or a Sony Marvel movie. So you're mixing
up. So it doesn't really count.
It doesn't really exist. Michael Bay could be directing Lobo for DC. Now, do you know anything about Lobo, Mike?
Is he not Black Cat's sidekick? And by that, I mean, no, I have no idea who Lobo
is. Yeah, no, Lobo is, I really don't know that much about Lobo, from what I've gathered, he is this roided up monster machine, gigantic muscle man. He's a perfect protagonist for a Michael Bay movie.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. My card. The name's Lobo. That's L as in lacerate, O as in obliterate, B as in disembowel, and O as in, I guess I can use obliterate twice, huh? What do you think?
So it's just Bane, but different?
Kind of. I think he's more, like, irreverent and, like, sort of in the line of, like, Deadpool.
Okay.
From what I kind of understand, Lobo was DC's answer to Deadpool, which is weird because Deadpool was Marvel's answer to Deadshot.
Yeah. Or Deathstroke?
Or Deathstroke, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, comic books, same. Who cares?
Everything is the same.
Yeah.
So I think DC might be trying to chase that Deadpool, kind of those Deadpool dollars, mm-hmm. and throwing in Michael Bay on there. I mean, he's a bankable director. People see his movies for sure. He's made 5 Transformers movies. They've all made like $1 billion. So, you know, I could see why they would want this. But at the same time, like, keep it. There's no reason for this. So, yeah, that's a thing that's happening in the superhero world. Also, last episode we talked about the possibility of a Kitty Pryde movie from director Tim Miller, the guy who made Deadpool. And he's currently working on the new Terminator movie, Terminator 6. But it seems like this Kitty Pryde movie is getting closer to actually happening. And they got somebody pretty cool writing it. Brian Michael Bendis, who is the comic book writer behind several Marvel comics over the last, like, 20 years. He created Ultimate Spider-Man and I think pretty much launched the entire Ultimate line of Marvel comics, if I'm not mistaken. But Ultimate Spider-Man is kind of his big thing. He created Miles Morales and wrote Jessica Jones, those old comics. And he's a huge name from Marvel. He actually just left Marvel, the comics company, recently. He's going to be starting working for DC very soon on their comics line. So it's interesting that they ended up getting him for this Kitty Pryde movie. But yeah, like I said before, I'm a big fan of Kitty Pryde as a character, and I'm into the idea of a Kitty Pryde movie, and Brian Michael Bendis writing it. Like, that's pretty cool. I'm into that idea.
Yeah, Bendis is not somebody I don't think I've ever read, but he's one of those people, you know, I'm not particularly well-versed in comics or like reading comics anyway. But he's that's a name that I've heard thrown around a lot. I guess it's cool to have a comics industry writer be writing a comic movie. I mean, cool, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. I know Geoff Johns does a lot of the DC movies too and stuff like that. But anyway, yeah. So I wanted to mention that briefly. And then we get into the big superhero movie news, Mike, which just happened a couple of hours ago as we're recording this. It was
hot off the presses.
Hot off the presses. The presses could not be any hotter than right now, Mike. Joss Whedon, the director of Justice League and several other films. That will be his legacy for sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
Joss Whedon was supposed to be making a Batgirl movie for DC. I remember reporting about that. That was like almost a year ago that was announced. And then he ended up doing a lot of reshoots work on Justice League. And now he's not doing Batgirl anymore. He is out. He's out of Batgirl. And the DC universe suddenly looks a lot less bright than it did.
Yeah.
And it didn't look so bright to begin with, but it looks a lot less now.
The Snyderverse, not looking up.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to have to... Like, it won't be the Snyderverse anymore. I don't think Zack Snyder is back for any, is going to be coming back for any more movies. But Joss Whedon's Batgirl was one of the most, like, enticing things that DC had to offer in the coming years. And now it's just not happening.
Well, do we know is it just totally canceled or is Joss Whedon just not involved anymore?
I totally see a Batgirl movie happening at some point. But it just seems like it was a movie that was happening because DC met with Joss Whedon and they were like, hey, what character would you like to make a movie for? And he said Batgirl. And they were like, okay.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because DC has also announced, you know, 25 other movies. They're making a Joker Origins movie. Like, nothing is off the table right now.
Yeah.
They got Michael Bay for a Lobo movie. Like, there's...
Just throwing everything at the wall and whatever sticks.
Yeah, whatever sticks. But I mean, the pairing of director and material there was very exciting. But I guess Joss Whedon has said, like, he had been working on it for like a year, but never realized he had never actually had, like, a real story for it. So he just kind of left the project.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is just, like, the PR, like, we had creative differences reasoning, or is this DC Warner Brothers kind of reading the writing on the wall and saying, maybe we should give Batgirl to a female director?
I think that's that could be part of it. I think also part of it could be fallout from Justice League, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
That movie underperformed severely at the box office. Actually, Black Panther made more in 4 days than Justice League made in its entire theatrical run, which is...
I just want to bask in that for a second. Let that sink in.
Just want to really revel in that fact. But yeah, like, and Justice League is a movie starring Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. It should have crossed like $1.5 billion easily. And it didn't. And, you know, that, and not even was it financially unsuccessful, but it was critically pretty unsuccessful as well. Most people, even people who liked it, thought it was just, like, fine. So it's a weird case. I feel like, you know, Joss Whedon was kind of brought in to, like, save Justice League, and I think he did the best he could with what he was given. But, yeah, it just, it was a weird mesh of styles, and I think that may have had an impact on him working with DC in the future. And that's a bummer. It kind of makes me angry at Justice League, honestly.
You kind of resent that?
Yeah, I mean, we both gave the movie a lot of shit in our review of that movie. You know, we both disliked Justice League, I think.
Yeah.
But part of the silver lining was that, like, oh, well, you know, Joss Whedon is doing this. It's like, you know, okay, I'm doing this as a favor to them so that I can get, like, complete creative control on Batgirl or something or whatever. That was my thought process. And I was like, all right, well, I got to suffer through this Justice League movie, and then that Batgirl movie is coming, and it'll be great. And now,
yeah,
not so much. So, yeah.
I'm sorry that the imagined world that you created for yourself wasn't actually the true one.
Yes. Thank you, Mike. Finally, somebody understands. but yeah, so that is a huge bummer for sure. And it makes me, like, I feel like we've wasted, like, a year of Joss Whedon's time. Like, he could have made, like, a new TV show or some kind of weird Shakespeare project in the
that's true.
Like, we could have had a new Black and White, Much Ado About Nothing, like, you know, Much Ado About Nothing or something. Like,
just goddamn.
Something along those lines.
More Ado About Nothing.
More Ado About Nothing. How about Much Ado About Something?
Ooh.
Although that destroys the pun of the name, I guess.
It does.
But anyway, yeah. So disappointing news for sure. But now let's move on from the superhero movie news and talk about some video games, Mike. I was actually on a podcast the other day, guest starring on my friend's podcast. I don't know if I told you this. Did I tell you this?
You did.
Okay, yeah.
But tell the listeners, Mike.
Yeah, I was a guest on a podcast called Red Light Roundtable. I want to say the name.
What an amazing plug.
It's a good podcast. You can check out my Facebook page and stuff if you want to listen to that. Yeah, Red Light Roundtable, I believe, is what it's called. And yeah, I was on as a guest. It's a video game podcast, which isn't really my forte, but the topic on hand was movies based on video games, and that is something I know a lot more about. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about what the future holds for a lot of these video game movies. You know, there's a new Tomb Raider coming out. There's a new Super Mario Bros. Movie in the works from Illumination Animation.
What? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No, that was announced pretty recently.
Amazing.
It's animated. It's not going to be like, you know, the old, like, Bob Hoskins, John Leguizamo. I mean,
is it worth making, though?
I wish they could make a movie half as insane as that movie, because that movie is fucking bonkers.
And you, Koopa, you're a lousy leader!
One thing I cannot stand is naysaying. Simon, de-evolve him now.
De-evolve. Cretaceous.
Our old king! You try to get rid of him, but the king is everywhere! You can't get rid of him!
See you later, alligator.
Ever!
But anyway, yes, there is stuff on the horizon, but every time there's a new video game movie, it always just seems like, you know, I get my hopes up and then they're pounded back down again. I was excited for Warcraft because Duncan Jones is behind it, destroyed. You know, I was excited for Assassin's Creed because, like, Michael Fassbender and Justin Kurzel, and destroyed. Now, the director of Sicario 2, Stefano Solima, has been hired to not only direct a Call of Duty movie, but actually they want him to launch a whole Call of Duty cinematic universe, Mike.
Yeah. It's just like, well, okay, we're at this point now. That's what it's going to be from now on.
Yeah, I mean, I've played maybe a collective 2 to 3 hours of Call of Duty in my entire lifetime, scattered across several games.
That's impressive.
I think it is an impressive statistic, actually. But I'm assuming you've played a little bit more Call of Duty than I have, right? Like
I was a college kid in the late 2000s, so yes.
Yeah, fair enough.
Or early 2010s, I guess. What year is it, Mike? How does time work? We'll never know.
Is this the end of Twin Peaks, Mike? Is that what's going on right now?
Yes.
Is the girl next to you actually start screaming?
It's actually a Jumanji reference, foreshadowing.
Ooh, yeah. Anyway. So you've played some of these Call of Duty games. Is there enough story in these games to warrant one movie, let alone a universe full of movies?
I mean, I guess so. Like, some of those early Call of Duty movies – or movies, Jesus, here we go. Those early Call of Duty games were just story-driven, right, before they were, like, online multiplayer is a gold mine. So they were just, like, single-player campaigns. So those were cool. I remember playing them. I think they're just pretty basic World War II story, though. So, like, we've already got Saving Private Ryan. That's kind of it. We don't really need a whole lot more than that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, part of why I want to talk about this, it's just weird that they're saying, let's launch a Call of Duty cinematic universe without making a movie first. And it always comes back to, like, a while back, I think we talked about maybe Universal's Dark Universe or something, and how they tried to make The Mummy, and that was supposed to launch a universe, and it completely bombed. And you mentioned Film Crit Hulk's tweet, which is that, everyone wants to make The Avengers, but no one wants to take the time to make Iron Man, and that's literally all it is. Like, these cinematic universes keep failing because nobody takes the time to actually make a good movie first. That's all we want. All we want is a decent movie. That's why DC is floundering. That's why Dark Universe is just dead in the water. I think there's supposed to be like a King Arthur universe that's supposed to build out of that Guy Ritchie King Arthur movie. That's obviously never going to materialize. And it's like, nobody's even asking for this. Like, why?
We're getting Godzilla vs. Kong, though.
That's true, and that one's kind of working. I mean, so far.
We'll see.
Because they made two separate movies. They made a Godzilla movie, and they made a King Kong movie, right? And then there's going to be a Godzilla 2, and then they're doing Godzilla versus Kong. And, these movies were decent.
Right.
You know,
they met the bare minimum of being, like, pretty okay.
Yeah, and I like Godzilla a lot, and Kong, Kong was fun. So if you just hit that bare minimum of, like, hey, I enjoyed watching this, I'll watch another thing in this,
Yeah.
That's literally all you have to do. And for some reason, studios don't seem to grasp that. So I'm going to bet money that this Call of Duty cinematic universe never takes off in the first place.
If we ever get a movie from it, yeah.
Yeah, if we ever get a single movie from it, which I don't think we ever will. I don't think this universe ever happens. anyway, let's move on to the next bit of news. Did you ever get around to seeing It, Mike?
No, I did not, actually.
Oh, man. I feel like you would really enjoy it. I feel weird saying it is a weird title for a movie, and it's because every time I want to refer to it, I am either talking about it as like the pronoun or it as the title of the movie. I'm not sure which one I'm doing.
We'll never know. That's part of the mystery.
That's what makes it so terrifying. It was a big smash hit. I'm talking in rhyme now. It was a big hit in the box office, and the idea behind the first movie is that it took place just in the kids section of the novel, and then in the second movie, they will do the adult section. So there's been a lot of fan casting around, like, who could play these kids as adults? And one of the names that has been thrown around a lot is Jessica Chastain as the female character in It, whose name I do not remember, but whose actress was named Sophia Lillis, and she was great. And I could totally see Jessica Chastain playing an adult version of her.
Henry and his goons are over by the west entrance, so you should be fine.
Oh, I wasn't...
Everyone knows he's looking for you. What's he listening to? New Kids on the Block.
I don't even like them. I was just...
Wait, you're the new kid, right? Now I get it.
There's nothing to get.
I'm just messing with you. I'm Beverly Marsh.
Yeah, I know that, because we're in the same class. Social studies, and you were... I'm Ben, but... Pretty much everybody just calls me
the new kid.
And so, yeah, she's officially in talks for It Chapter 2 to play that character. So,
all right.
Yeah, there it is. That's pretty cool. And, I mean, she worked with Andy Muschietti in the past. She was in the movie Mama that he directed, which was a really great horror movie that I feel like I don't really remember that much about it, but I remember just really digging it when it was in the theaters. And I would really like to watch it again, actually, because it was a lot of fun. But anyway, yeah, so Jessica Chastain reunited with Andy Muschietti for It Chapter 2. And there's not much else to that story other than that. I just think it's cool.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah. All right, now we move on into another bit of rumor news, I guess this is. This isn't official yet, but it's kind of enticing. And it has to do with the James Bond franchise. Mike, we're both big fans of this franchise.
Yes.
And we've known for a little while that Daniel Craig is coming back for one last movie, and we've known that Sam Mendes is not coming back to direct this one. He directed Skyfall and Spectre. But it sounds like Eon Productions wanted like a named director for this one, like they had with Sam Mendes, somebody who's well-known. And there's been rumors around, like, oh, what if Christopher Nolan did a Bond movie? Or, like,
right.
What if Denis Villeneuve did a Bond movie? These were, like, names that people have been talking about a lot, actually. And neither one seemed super plausible. Denis Villeneuve seemed more plausible. Nolan doesn't need to do a Bond movie. Like,
no.
He just does not need to.
Villeneuve would, just because he can make the weirdest Bond movie.
Yes, exactly. But but Villeneuve, I think, has his hands tied with Dune right now, which
right.
is a beautiful sentence. So yeah, Eon seems like they want a name director for James Bond 25, this final outing with Daniel Craig. And they may have found one. Danny Boyle is the frontrunner to direct James Bond 25. And that is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy. So Danny Boyle is the director of Trainspotting, 28 Days Later, Sunshine, 127 Hours, Slumdog Millionaire, Steve Jobs. He's a director who I find relatively hit or miss, but when he hits, I like him a lot. Like, I really love 127 Hours. I really like both Trainspotting movies. I really dug Steve Jobs. I thought Steve Jobs was great. But he has such a kinetic style that I don't,
yeah.
like, I don't think of James Bond when I see his style. But at the same time, like, just saying that, like, oh, Danny Boyle could direct a Bond. Like, I'm really curious what his James Bond would look like. I would want to see it.
Yeah, I agree. I think he is someone that could do some just cool, weird shit with it.
Yes.
And just, like, it would be interesting to see a very unique take on James Bond. I think the same kind of way Skyfall and Sam Mendes was. It would be cool to see it kind of reinvented again. Just as much as I love what Marvel's and the cinematic universe stuff, I think Bond holds a special place as being that kind of character that is always recast, always different directors. It's always this kind of turning over of talent that can go through that franchise.
Right.
So I'm just as get as many people as we can into this Bond franchise.
Yeah, yeah, why not? And one of the other cool things about this is that, which lends more credence to the Boyle rumor, the guy who wrote Trainspotting is writing the script for this movie. Yeah, but what's interesting is that there's already a script in play. So I think what's going to happen, because they already have this script, and they've pretty much committed to a lot of the stuff in the script that already exists. And now this guy who wrote Trainspotting, I didn't write his name down, so I'm sorry about that. But he is writing his own script, and then like he and Boyle are kind of collaborating on it. They're going to pitch their James Bond to the producers, and if they like this version, they're going to scrap the script they already have and do Danny Boyle in this guy's script. And if they don't, then they'll just use the script they already have and get somebody else to direct it, I guess. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I think the movie is supposed to start filming by the end of this year.
So there's not a whole lot of time.
Not a whole lot of time. So we'll see how this goes. But I'm definitely interested in Danny Boyle doing James Bond 25, especially, I mean, he's just coming off of Trainspotting 2, which was great. And I feel like was kind of slept on. Like people didn't go out to see that movie as much as I feel like they probably should have. Especially, I feel like there is like a lot of people know Trainspotting. A lot of people saw Trainspotting, and I feel like there is like an affection for that movie. So I was surprised that T2 Trainspotting didn't get that much press. But T2 Trainspotting is great. Go see it if you haven't. It's real good.
I can't fail again, Mark. You know, I need to detox the system.
Spud, detox the system. What does that even mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's not getting it out of your body that's the problem. It's getting it out of your mind. You are an addict.
I think I haven't heard that 100,000 times, Mark. You got 12 more steps for my comedy.
So, be addicted. Be addicted to something else.
Like you're running until I feel sick?
Yes. Or something else. You've got to channel it. You've got to control it. People try all sorts. Some people do boxing.
Boxing?
Well, it's just an example. I don't mean you should...
So what did you channel into?
Getting away.
He's also got a new FX series coming out in March called Trust with Brendan Fraser. And yeah, and I'm kind of like really excited about it. I think
no wonder there was a big GQ article that came out, I think, today about Brendan Fraser and his comeback and stuff.
Yeah, I actually read that article too. It was really interesting. But yeah, I'm here for the Brendan Fraser comeback, and I'm here for that TV show, and I think I'm here for a Danny Boyle James Bond movie. I think it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and then we also have one last bit of actual news here, and this is just All right. Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan working on Rush Hour 4. It's happening.
All right, cool. Moving on.
Are you a Rush Hour fan, Mike?
I mean, as much as anyone can be a Rush Hour fan, I guess. I haven't seen those movies in like 10 years probably, but like I remember really liking them when I saw it.
Yeah, I've seen all three and I didn't like any of them.
Wow.
I'll be honest. And I love Jackie Chan, so I feel like I should like them, you know, a little bit. But I don't know. I remember watching them. Like I remember watching the first one I think I watched them all on like TBS. So they're all like, you know, for cable and stuff like that. But I think I watched the first one and I was like, well, I didn't like this. But I like Jackie Chan, so I'm going to check out Rush Hour 2. And then I watched Rush Hour 2, and I was like, all right, I didn't like this. But maybe Rush Hour 3 will be the one.
This is the one.
And then Rush Hour 3 was the worst one. So, yeah, I don't know. What's interesting, though, I mean, so those two come back together. That's interesting. And maybe Rush Hour 4 will be the one. Who knows?
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Brett Ratner directed the first three Rush Hour movies. He's one of the guys who has been accused of sexual assault by multiple women. I doubt they'll bring him back for Rush Hour 4. So there could potentially be some new blood in this franchise. And so who knows? Maybe Rush Hour could be – let's make Rush Hour great again. You know what I'm saying? Let's...
Jesus Christ. It'll be your favorite up-and-coming director, Tim Miller. Friend of the show.
This is the recurring joke in the podcast now.
I don't know. I decided it was.
Tim Miller, who I stress is fine. He's gonna pull a great Terminator movie out of his ass, and I'll have to eat.
Oh, it's gonna be great! I'm so excited.
Yeah. I wanted to briefly bring up Rush Hour 4 because it just seems like kind of major news in the general sense, I guess. And
just in a general sort of way, you know.
Exactly. And then we do have to end film news with some sad news. Like we did have a couple of deaths in the film world. Recently. First up is character actor Reg E. Cathy, whose name you may not know, but he was on The Wire and he was on House of Cards. He played the restaurant owner that Kevin Spacey's character would go to on House of Cards.
I don't know how Claire does it.
What did you just say? Is this how you treat her? She part of the collection too?
I don't know where all this is coming from, but it's extremely ungrateful given all that I have done for you.
What did you do for me, Frank?
This is the White House. You will call me Mr. President.
You are a motherfucker.
Get out!
My bad. You are a motherfucker, Mr. President.
And he's a guy who was really good in those roles. He's also recognizable. He was Sue Storm and Johnny Storm's father in Fantastic Four, the reboot.
That's right.
So, yeah, I kind of just wanted to give him a shout out because his work is he was always a really good actor in everything he was in. He's also in What About Bob, actually, with Bill Murray and Richard Dreyfuss, now that I'm thinking about it. In that movie. But, so I just wanted to give him a shout out. And then I also wanted to mention Johan Johansson, the composer, the film composer, who died very suddenly just a couple weeks ago. And, he's somebody who had just kind of come on the scene in the film composing world, at least. And he kind of made a name for himself with his work with Denis Villeneuve. We've mentioned him on the podcast before because you were a big fan of the score for Arrival, I think we were talking about.
Might have been Arrival or Prisoners?
He did Prisoners and Arrival. He also did Sicario.
It's probably all three, let's be real.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this like his scores were always really good, and I think they really informed those Villeneuve movies in a big way. He did write a score for Blade Runner, and it ended up getting replaced with the Hans Zimmer score. And he also wrote a score for Mother, Darren Aronofsky's movie, actually, and they ended up not using that either. I was reading into like the process of that. He was talking about it, Johan Johansson, and he was like, we did the score, we wrote it, and it was good, but like the movie worked a lot better without the score, like without the music in the background, because it was just supposed to be this tense like psychological thriller. So it was interesting to hear that process. But he also scored the upcoming Nicolas Cage movie, Mandy, which is getting which is getting a huge response out of Sundance and stuff like that. It's going to be the big Nicolas Cage comeback movie that I've been dying for low these many years. So I'm very excited to see that. But yeah, so just very sad news because Johan Johansson, I feel like, had a lot of great film scores still left in him. Like, he was just getting started in the in the composing world. So that is sad for sure. And that, I believe, wraps up our film news, Mike. We haven't had to end our film news and sad news in a while, so that's kind of nice at least, right?
It feels good to have a tradition back, but it's a sad tradition, so maybe not.
I mean, I was saying it was nice that we didn't have to do it for a while.
What an interesting take to have.
Anyway... all right, let's move on from film news, Mike, and get into our discussions starting right now.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're gonna talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, it's time for discussions here on Film Bookcast. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
Today I have two quick discussions, Mike, two television shows.
Okay.
The first, just because I know you've been hounding me for months, maybe. I don't even remember.
Like a full year. Like at least since the show first started, but then when it hit Netflix, I really went for it.
You shanghaied me into watching the first half of the season just out of nowhere. We were hanging out and you just were like, yeah, we're putting this on and it's happening.
Yeah, I trapped you in my house and we watched six episodes of the show.
And that show is The Good Place.
Yes.
Here we are. Just press that button and it's goodbye, Janet. Chidi, I can see that you're worried. And I just want to assure you, I am not human and I cannot feel pain.
Thank you. That helps.
However, I should warn you. I am programmed with a failsafe measure. As you approach the kill switch, I will begin to beg for my life. It's just there in case of an accidental shutdown, but it will seem very real.
Cool. So who's doing this, me or you?
I think I have to. Being a bystander seems worse somehow. Okay, here we go.
Chidi, no, Chidi, please don't hurt me. I don't want to die, please. Again, I am not human. I can't die. I am simply an anthropomorphized vessel of knowledge built to make your life easier.
Your pleading seems so real.
Oh, yes, it is a very effective failsafe.
Ugh. You want a robot killed, right? You have to do it yourself.
Eleanor? Eleanor, no, please, wait. Eleanor, I have kids. I have three beautiful children. Tyler, Emma, and little tiny baby Philip. Look at Tyler. Tyler has asthma, but he is battling it like a champ. Look at him. No, Eleanor, look at them. Look at them!
Oh, it's so realistic!
Eleanor, again, I'm not human. This is a stock photo of the crowd at the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Award.
Created by Michael Schwer? I don't remember how you pronounce what his name is.
I was going to say sure, like a joke, like, hey, yeah, you're right. But
but I would have went over my head because I didn't know how to pronounce it. and this is... everyone probably knows what The Good Place is, right? Yeah, Kristen Bell stars along with Ted Danson and a bunch of other really great people that I can't remember off the top of my head. Kristen Bell dies, ends up in The Good Place, the afterlife, and farcical shenanigans ensue, basically.
That is the best description of that show of all time. Farcical shenanigans ensue.
Tell me I'm wrong, though.
You're not. You're not wrong.
And yeah, sure. Oh, my God. You said it. You just said it. Sure. There we go. Sure. created Parks and Rec. And was he on the writer on The Office or something? I can't remember.
Yeah, he wrote The Office for a while. He was a writer on The Office for a few years. He also played Moe's on The Office, Dwight's cousin.
Yeah, so if you like that kind of style, it's not the mockumentary, you know, look to the camera thing that the Office and Parks and Rec were, but it's that kind of silly, over-the-top humor stuff. So, and it's tons of fun. Yes. And you were right, Mike. I'm sorry I didn't listen to you sooner.
Yes.
And definitely the best thing is every episode ends on the most ridiculous cliffhanger.
Yep.
And it's hilarious.
Yeah, the show like burns through story just so incredibly fast. And it really comes to like a huge conclusion by season one, by the end of season one, and you're just left Like, I mean, the wait between season one and season two was so hard, Mike. I have no idea how to tell you that. Like,
but, yes, I've only watched season one. That's all that's available on Netflix so far.
Right. But yeah, you got to watch season two as soon as you can, because it is also aces. Might even be better than season one.
Wow.
So definitely get in on that.
Yeah, I also definitely, like you said, appreciate that they burn through story. And I love how much you can tell that it seems like the story and how much they fly through it is all in service of the cliffhanger. Like, it seems like they write all these things just so they can set up a cliffhanger for the end of the show.
It's possible, which is yeah.
Amazing. I love it. And the second thing I have to discuss is another TV show that I watched on Netflix. It is called The Last Kingdom.
Okay.
What is it? Ships. I saw them first from the beach.
What ships?
Thanes.
We were kings there once, boy. Our ancestors took this land, and it has been strengthened with our blood and bone. Now you are the new heir of Bebbanburg. And you will die for it if needed.
Yes, Father.
And this is a BBC/Netflix kind of thing. Like, it's not a Netflix original, I don't think. Or it might be now. I'm not exactly sure. I was looking into it that BBC kind of, like, dropped out once Netflix picked it up. So I'm not exactly sure what the situation is.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix has, like, co-productions with the BBC and stuff like that, too.
So. Yeah, it might be one of those kind of deals. And this is a story set in, I think, like 890 or 860 or something like that in England, when England was all Saxon, and the Danes invade. And this is just a kind of historical fiction drama. It's like pretty soap opera-y, but like in that kind of fun way.
Yeah.
And it's just about, you know, the main character was a teenager or a young boy, a young Saxon that gets kidnapped and kept raised as a slave by the Danes and like kind of accepted by the family. So it's him kind of grappling with him having been English, but now being raised Danish and trying to his whole identity and all this stuff. And it takes place in the last kingdom that hasn't been conquered by the Danes. So it's, you know, the threat of war and all this kind of stuff happening. It's sort of like a Game of Thrones without magic and not as complicated.
Okay.
But it does have a lot of that kind of like high political maneuvering and all this kind of stuff. But I'm mostly on board just for like the era. It's one of those kind of like gritty historical drama things. Like everyone's always filthy and it's really gory and all this kind of shit. So if you're into like, you know, like Game of Thrones often is also. If you're into that type of setting and story and you're kind of just on board to watch some drama just because, I recommend The Last Kingdom. It's only 8 episodes a season. There are 2 seasons up so far. I'm on episode 6 of season 1, so I'm getting there. Cool. So it's not a big commitment.
Nice. Yeah, very cool. That is The Last Kingdom, available on Netflix right now.
Yes.
And then I have a couple of movies to talk about in my discussions, the first of which is a movie that I had been putting this one off for so long. This movie came out... what was it, the week after Star Wars, or like the week before Star Wars, something like that? It was around the same time as Star Wars, and I didn't care about this. I didn't care about this movie at all. You know, it was one of those
things. You were out of fucks.
I saw the trailer for this, and I was like, all right, like, you know, this is a sequel to a movie that I really liked as a kid, you know, and I still have nostalgic feelings for, but at the same time, like, it's not something that is, like, near and dear to my heart. I don't care about it that much.
Okay.
So the movie I'm talking about right now is Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Fridge?
Yeah, I'm Fridge. Who are you?
It's me, Spencer.
Who is she?
Martha?
Why am I wearing half a shirt and short shorts in the jungle?
I think we got sucked into Jumanji and we become the avatars we chose.
So that means...
Bethany?
Oh, wait, Bethany? Don't look at it! No!
I'm an overweight middle-aged man.
Well, I don't have my Claritin, and all I see around here is pollen.
Well, I don't have the top 2 feet of my body.
Damn, that is a man right there. Don't cry, don't cry.
Which is the sequel to Jumanji, the 1995 Robin Williams movie, directed by Joe Johnston. This one stars The Rock, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and Karen Gillan. And it's directed by Jake Kasdan, who Jake Kasdan has been like kind of hit or miss as a director over the years. He did direct Walk Hard, which is one of the best movies ever made. So,
wow.
Gotta give him credit for that. Anyway, yeah, so Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle is a sequel to Jumanji. And in the original movie, you know, it's Robin Williams and Bonnie Hunt, and Robin Williams gets sucked into a board game, and then 20 years later, he comes back out, but they have to finish the board game because crazy shit starts happening all over the town. So in this movie, Jumanji turns into a video game. You know, we fast forward 20 years, and it is a sort of a direct sequel to the original. They do reference the original like once or twice, like it happens, but very, very briefly. But anyway, yeah, so this takes place, you know, 20 years later, present day, another group of kids find a video game called Jumanji, cause the board game actually like magically transforms into this video game that they play. And they end up getting sucked into, the video game. So the big difference here is that you're actually watching them inside the game as opposed to the original movie where you're watching, what happens after that. Right.
Right.
And you have to finish the game on the outside world. And I think it's an interesting angle to take, for sure. And so the idea here is that these characters, played by The Rock, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and Karen Gillan, are all the video game avatars that the kids in the real world are playing.
Right.
And that's pretty funny. Like, that's a pretty funny idea, you know. And they have fun with that. Jack Black plays, like, a teenage girl, and that's, like, kind of one of the things people are talking about. But, like, the nerdy kid gets in The Rock's body, and, like, the shy girl gets in Karen Gillan's, like, hot body, and, like, like, that's a plot point in the movie. I'm not just, like, ogling Karen Gillan. I mean, I kind of was, but, like...
It's in the trailer, but we get it.
It's in the trailer. And, you know, and the football star gets in, like, Kevin Hart's body and stuff like that. And so, yeah, like, there's some funny stuff happening here, and the movie has some fun with its premise, you know? But at the same time, like, it just feels very tired to me. Like, it's fine. The movie's fine. It's absolutely a capital F fine. Like, you know what I mean?
Like an A cinema score kind of fine.
Yeah, I guess you can describe it like that. It's not going to get the F cinema score, if that's what you mean. It's not going to get the coveted score like Mother and stuff like that. But yeah, I think the movie was okay. There are some decent gags. There are some fun action set pieces. But they all feel very, like, you know, just kind of run of the mill, like very kind of like rote. You use the word rote all the time, so I'm going to throw that one in there. Yeah, I think what really bugs me about this movie, though, and I was thinking back on the original Jumanji, and part of what I really like about that original movie is that that one really gets into the horror of, like, the shit that Robin Williams had to have gone through in that 20 years when he was stuck in the jungle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a psychological thriller at parts. There's some deep shit going on.
Yeah. And gets into, like, really, like, terrifying stuff. And, like, there's some, like, weird, like, body horror stuff going on. This part where the kid is turning into the monkey and that kind of thing in that movie. Remember that?
Yeah. Holy shit.
And, like, you know, a lot of that movie is about, like, Robin Williams' PTSD having to deal with, like, having spent 20 years alone in, like, this horrifying jungle.
You think monkeys, mosquitoes, and lions are bad? That's just the beginning. I've seen things you've only seen in your nightmares. Things you can't even imagine. Things you can't even see. There are things that haunt you in the night. Then something screams. Then you hear them eating. And you hope to God that you're not deserted. Afraid? You don't even know what afraid is. You will not last 5 minutes without me.
And this movie shows you that jungle, and it doesn't seem that bad. Like, it just doesn't seem, seem that bad.
You know, I never even considered that, like, that thing, that being a thing. Like, holy shit. Yeah. How that completely changes the first movie.
It basically does, yeah. And even weirder is that, you know, that's part of the plot point of the first movie, is that Robin Williams spent 20 years in the jungle, and he knows he spent 20 years in the jungle, right? Like, he was a kid when he went in there, and he grew up, right, while he was in the jungle. And when he comes out, he's adult Robin Williams. And in this movie, Nick Jonas plays a character who was sucked into the game, like, 20 years before these characters. But he doesn't realize he spent 20 years in the game, probably because he's an avatar in the video game realm of Jumanji. But he thinks it's only been a few months. And so when the movie, they like reveal to him that it's been 20 years, and it's kind of like this big thing. But at the same time, it's just like they did this in the first movie, but you felt that I feel like you felt it a lot more in that movie.
I think we found your next think piece for Crooked Marquee, Mike.
Here's what Jumanji gets wrong about Jumanji. So yeah, as it goes, it's fine. You know, The Rock and Kevin Hart are funny together. Jack Black is pretty funny in it. And Karen Gillan is cool in it. Like, Karen Gillan has some cool action beats and stuff like that. But yeah, overall, it's totally serviceable. And it made like $900 million billion at the box office. This was a surprise hit. Like, I really didn't think Jumanji would make this much money.
You know what I hope you're ready for, Mike?
What?
The Jumanji Cinematic Universe.
You're not wrong, because I feel like that's on the way. I mean, they're already working on Jumanji 3. which is weird to say. It's basically like Jumanji 2, and like the original Jumanji is like a prologue now at this point.
It doesn't even matter anymore.
It's completely inconsequential to what these new Jumanji movies are going to be. And that's a bummer, because I think that movie, you know, has its flaws, but it is, I think, a much better movie than Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle. But at the same time, I think there is value in the premise behind what they could do with this franchise, because if you're going to stick with The Rock, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and Karen Gillan, then you could have some fun changing up what those characters are in every movie. You know what I mean?
Ooh.
Like, because every theoretically, every movie would have, like, different kids getting sucked into the game or something.
Right.
And taking on these characters. So you can have, like, you know, the hot girl being in the Rock's body or something. And, like, that, getting used to that and that kind of thing. So there could be, like, interesting stuff happening there. Who knows? Point is, Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle is totally fine. And that's about all I have to say about that. Even though I talked about it for, like, 10 minutes.
We should have just done a full-length episode on
Jumanji.
On Jumanji.
Did you see Jumanji 2?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But I feel like I could probably fake my way through it. It seems really, like, there's not much happening there.
Yeah. Also, Bobby Cannavale is in this movie for some reason.
It's really well-paced, I bet. That's a joke for you, EJ, if you're listening.
I forgot. That is what EJ would say whenever he was like...
If you've never seen a movie but you want to pretend like you have, just say that it's really well paced.
Oh man, I forgot about that. But anyway, yeah, Bobby Cannavale is also in Jumanji 2 for some reason. He's like the villain of the game, and he's you know, just kind of generic, like, bad guy, video game bad guy kind of thing.
Is he just doing, like, his Bobby Cannavale thing?
Yeah, a little bit, you know, but he's more like just over the top, like, evil bad guy. Like a video game cartoonish kind of bad guy thing going on.
Okay.
And it's kind of fun, but at the same time, it's stuff that would feel like kind of derivative in a video game, and now I'm watching and now I'm watching it in a movie. That's kind of how I felt about most of the movie. So yeah, that's Jumanji 2. And then I did want to talk about this other movie I watched called Lucky. Now, have you heard about Lucky, Mike? This kind of flew under the radar, I feel like, towards the end of 2017.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, this is the directorial debut of director John Carroll Lynch, who is a character actor. You may recognize him as the probable Zodiac killer from Zodiac. That's
okay, yep,
that's,
got him.
That's how I always think about him. Like, he's the Zodiac killer. this is a movie I've been wanting to see for a while, because this movie stars Harry Dean Stanton in the lead role as Lucky. And Harry Dean Stanton, one of my favorite character actors of all time, and he passed away back in, like, September. And this movie came out, like, 2 weeks later. It was, you know, that was kind of the thing. And this movie is about Harry Dean Stanton. Just, like...
Just straight up.
He is the lead role of this movie, and it's about a chain-smoking atheist who's going on this spiritual journey. He's 90 years old, trying to accept death and come to terms with the inevitability of death.
Okay.
And it's fascinating to watch, especially knowing that Harry Dean Stanton died just 2 weeks before this movie was released, and realizing that, like, he was probably going through a lot of the same things this character is going through.
Right.
And his performance is so, so good in this movie. And there is a cavalcade of great character actors who just show up for, like, a scene or two to be great. Ron Livingston is in this movie. Harry Dean Stanton's alien co-star Tom Skerritt is in this movie for a brief bit. And one of my favorites, David Lynch is in this movie.
What?
Yes, David Lynch appears in an acting role, and he is fantastic in it. He is so good.
The tortoise is an amazing creature, Lucky. They're as noble as a king and as kind-hearted as a grandmother. I miss my friend, his company. I miss his personality.
He's not missing, Howard. He's just not here. He's there, wherever the fuck that is. And if he's not there, then he's nowhere.
Well, I'm sure he's okay.
Why don't you go fuck yourself?
Who?
You don't give a shit about him. You're just here to suck him dry, you lamprey, leech, vulture. Calling him out of his last dime just to leave everything to a turtle?
Tortoise! He's a tortoise. You know that saguaro near your yard? That thing was barely a twig when Roosevelt was born. They're contemporaries, you know. They watched each other grow up. President Roosevelt was born in a hole in the desert. At that time, a little creature smaller than my thumb. And something clicked inside that little Roosevelt brain, and he scampered up out of that hole and faced the world. You all think of a tortoise as something slow, But I think about the burden he has to carry on his back. Yeah, it's for protection. But ultimately, it's the coffin he's going to get buried in. And he has to drag that thing around his entire life? Go ahead and laugh. But he affected me. You know what I'm saying? He affected me. There are some things in this universe, ladies and gentlemen, that are bigger than all of us. And a tortoise is one of them.
And this movie has like a lot of humor to it. Like it's very humble. It's very funny. And it's also very sad and very tragic. And like you run the gamut of emotions with Lucky. And I feel like with Harrington Sands' performance, it grounds the entire thing. He is so good in this movie. The final shot of this movie is so beautiful, and it's a perfect send off for Harrington Stanton as an actor and as a screen presence. So it's well worth checking out if you like Harrington Stanton, which I know you do. It's definitely one to keep an eye out for. It's really great. It's like an hour and 20 minutes, so it's not like it takes up a lot of your time. And it's just great. And seriously, David Lynch is so good in this movie too. He is so funny. But also like very like, you know, human and sad, and it's really great.
Yeah. Speaking of Harry Dean Stanton, I have one more discussion real quick. Relevant to our last episode where you talked about Escape from L.A., this weekend I watched Escape from New York. It's really good. Harry Dean Stanton's in it. Kurt Russell's great. People should watch it.
Yeah. Had you not seen it before?
I actually hadn't, no.
What? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Why are we talking?
I have a deal for you. You receive full pardon for every criminal action you've committed in the United States. It was an accident. About an hour ago, a small jet went down inside New York City. The president was on board.
President of what?
That's not funny, Plissken.
It's on Filmstruck, which is amazing because they had a collection of movies. I think they called it Drop the Mic, and it's about musical performers being in movies. And Escape from New York is in there because Isaac Hayes is the villain.
Right, yes.
So it's great. It's Levon Cleef or whatever his name.
Levon Cleef.
Yeah, Levon Cleef.
Yes.
Great. Amazing. I mean, it's good. People know Escape from New York is good.
Know Escape from New York is good, but they should always be reminded that it's good. And yeah,
correct.
And that is one of those movies. I mean, Harry Dean Stanton shows up and is great. And I think we talked about it when Harry Dean Stanton died. We talked about him, but Roger Ebert once said that no movie can be entirely bad if Harry Dean Stanton is in it. And I believe that to be true, very much. Anyway, I think that about wraps up our discussions, Mike. Let's move on into our featured review of Black Panther.
I have seen gods fly. I've seen men build weapons that I couldn't even imagine.
Uh-huh.
I've seen aliens drop from the sky.
Yeah.
But I have never seen anything like this. How much more are you hiding?
Hola! Let's go! Go!
We are home. My son, it is your time.
Show me my respect and bow down.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be. Don't freeze.
I never freeze.
All right, that was from the trailer for Black Panther, the new movie written by Ryan Coogler and Joe Robert Cole, and directed by Ryan Coogler. It stars Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, Denai Gurira, Martin Freeman, Daniel Kaluuya, Letitia Wright, Winston Duke, Angela Bassett, Forest Whitaker, and Andy Serkis, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Black Panther reads, T'Challa, the king of Wakanda, rises to the throne in the isolated, technologically advanced African nation, but his claim is challenged by a vengeful outsider. And then there's a little bit more to that synopsis, but I feel like it's a spoiler. Like, it kind of spoils like a reveal that happens later on in the movie. So I think I won't read the rest of that synopsis until we get into spoilers, and then we can laugh at IMDb for putting that in the synopsis. Usually, our problem with IMDb is that they're not detailed enough, and this time it feels like they're too detailed.
It's Black Panther changed the game for everything, Mike.
Exactly. So this movie, Black Panther, it feels like an event, right? This feels like a huge deal. Made, I think, $400 million worldwide in its opening four-day weekend. Had, I think, one of the biggest... I think it has the second biggest Marvel opening weekend ever behind the original Avengers, and that's like the only one that it didn't beat. And that's insane. Like, that's insane to think about. And that's crazy. And I mean, this is directed by Ryan Coogler, who I'm a big fan of. He made Fruitvale Station, which is great. Creed, one of the best movies of the fucking decade. And I think he was, like, as soon as he was announced, I was like, I thought he was very clearly the perfect person to do Black Panther justice.
I agree. This is a perfect pairing as yes. far as that can go.
Yeah. And on top of that, I mean, Chadwick Boseman made his first appearance as Black Panther in Captain America Civil War. And he stole the show there. Like, he was so good in Civil War, and he basically has his own, like, subplot going on in that movie that almost acts as a preview to Black Panther, but it functions well within the actual movie Civil War itself. And he's great there, and then he is now the lead of this movie, and he is so good as T'Challa. Like, I'm a big fan of his performance. I think he leads this movie with such grace, humor, and badassness. And also, the dude is 41.
Like, what?
Yeah. I was just like browsing through Wikipedia the other day and found out that Chadwick Boseman is 41 years old, and I did a double take. I was like, what? How?
That's insane.
How is that real? How is that true? But apparently it is. Yeah. So Mike, what were your overall thoughts on Black Panther? How do you think this fits into the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we've seen so far? What are you laughing at? What are you laughing at me for?
I thought you were going to ask me the question. Complete works. How does this fit into the overall?
How does this fit into the filmography of Nicolas Cage, Mike? Go. Yeah. You have
well,
it's
the natural progression of Black Panther.
yeah.
Oh, man. That's an in-joke for anyone that listens to the other podcast that we do. The Complete Works comes out in the off week of this podcast.
Yeah, that's a joke for both listeners. I was gonna say people who listen to both podcasts, but both listeners is also right?
I'm sure Nick and Colin appreciated it. But anyway.
Yeah.
Black Panther is awesome, yo. That's it.
That's fair. Okay, we can wrap this up now. I think that's all it is.
We used all our time on discussions and film news.
Yeah. And making in jokes that no one gets. Yeah, that's
oh my god, we should start over.
Should we? I feel nah. like we're good.
Yeah, we're fine. We'll fix it in post.
All right. Do you want to elaborate on Black Panther being awesome, yo, Mike?
Yes. This is a it actually feels like something very different from the Marvel movies at large, right? We often talk about, you know, I talk about Ant-Man being one of my favorite because it's such a small scale.
Sure.
You know, it's its own thing off on its own. Black Panther has that going on, but it is in such a different way. It affects so much going on in the cinematic universe and also the whole real world. This is such a momentous and important movie, a lot like, you know, we talked about this kind of thing, the overall greater context going on around this movie with Wonder Woman, right? It's very similar. Important movie that deserves the success it's having, and it will elevate everyone else along with it as a people. And you can feel that consciousness, the awareness of that in, I think, like every frame of this movie, and it revels in it. It doesn't seem to be like afraid of that responsibility that that this movie has. And this movie just kind of shoulders it a lot like Black Panther and is like, yeah, I got this, son. Don't worry about it. You know, I love that there's one of the first lines he says is like, oh, I never freeze. It's just like, oh, yes. Or when have I ever frozen? Whatever he says. It's fucking great.
Yes.
And there's a lot of really great action, and it's got the trademark Marvel wit, which I saw something I didn't get a chance to take a look at it, but like Donald Glover's involved somehow. Like, I think he did like a script doctor thing or something.
He did like a quick pass in the script to like punch up some of the jokes. I think in the same way where like Dan Harmon works in the Doctor Strange script for like a day or something like that. There's like a quick, you know, there's like a quick like kind of pass, like, hey, we're all friends, so they'll throw. Like,
yeah, sure.
Throw a few jokes in there, you know?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, not that it's Donald Glover's, like, comedy is noticeable in this, but this movie is really funny, and I like that a lot about it.
Fair enough. So you're saying it's a Marvel movie.
It is indeed a Marvel movie. There's action and jokes and superheroes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I am also a big fan of Black Panther, obviously. I feel like, you know, with our Marvel reviews, I love doing them. I think they're a lot of fun to talk about. At the same time, I feel like it's always the same thing. I think that's partially because Marvel tends to make the same movie over and over again in a different coat.
Yes.
But it's a good movie that they're making over and over again, you know what I mean?
Like, that coat, every coat is just warm and snuggly, and I want to spend a lot of time there.
It's a coat of many colors. that's my Joseph joke for...
wow. Some might even say Technicolor.
Yes, it's a Technicolor dream coat of film that we are blessed to have. But man, what is wrong with us tonight?
What's happening? Oh man, we're tired.
We're
bet.
So tired. Anyway, but yeah, no, I really enjoy Black Panther. I think it does have a relatively standard superhero template plot. And that extends to the action scenes, which I think do occasionally come to life. But I feel like I wanted a little more out of them, especially because, you know, the action scenes with Coogler and Creed are so, so, so good. Like, they are so inventive and interesting in that movie. And I feel like here you get a little bit of that, like, that pre-Viz Marvel. Marvel tends to storyboard and, like, visualize their action scenes pretty much, like, ahead of time, like, before the director's even involved. And I feel like that's occasionally felt here. That's felt in a lot of their movies for me. But I do think that they do occasionally come to life. There's this one bit in the casino that has like the cool Coogler long take. It's awesome. And I did enjoy the car chase and stuff like that. There's a lot of good stuff going on there. Outside of that, I think the movie's greatest strength, you have the lead performance of Chadwick Boseman. I think the greatest strength is the introduction of Wakanda and the culture that it just builds around that. I feel like the more time you spend in Wakanda in this movie, the more you want to know about it and the more you want to just stay in Wakanda and do more Wakanda things. And it's also a great looking movie too. I mean, just there are scenes in the ancestral plane that especially are very beautiful. Rachel Morrison, who was the cinematographer from Mudbound, recently nominated for an Oscar for Best Cinematography, first woman to do so, was the DP for this movie, and I think she does an amazing job. I think there's a lot to love here. I think this movie feels monumental as you're watching it, like you said. I mean, this is a black director with an almost entirely black cast. Making a movie on this scale, like, that's incredibly rare in Hollywood, especially one that speaks so directly to the black experience in America and is also steeped in tribal African culture as well. Like, it's very much about all those things. And I think that helps elevate the movie. And it's saying things that I feel like aren't normally said in blockbusters of this scale.
Absolutely. I feel like... Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger might be the most interesting Marvel villain we've ever had.
I think he probably is, yeah. And I think part of that is Michael B. Jordan's performance, which is incredible. And I think Michael B. Jordan is one of the best actors we have working today. And I realized as I was watching this, like, I looked back at his Wikipedia, he hasn't been in a movie since Creed, and I think that's a damn tragedy.
Wow, what?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's been, like, yeah, I'm sure that's by choice. Like, it's
I'm sure.
You know, but it's weird for sure. But yeah, him as Killmonger, so good, and it's such a well-written character, and I think so perfectly tied into the story of Black Panther, of the character Black Panther, and of the movie Black Panther. There's been a lot of like talk on the internet, like, hey, Killmonger was right. Like, there's because there's a lot of nuance brought to that character, and a lot of things that character brings up that are like, wow, he's making a lot of really good points. You know, he's just going about them in, like, you know, bad ways, as villains tend to do in film.
That's definitely one of the things about this movie, too, is every character is so well-rounded and so nuanced. This movie out Wonder Woman's Wonder Woman, I think. Okoye and Nakia? Is that Lupita Nyong'o's
character's name? I think Nakia, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know how to pronounce Okoye's the actor Michonne from Walking Dead.
Denai Guerrero. Yeah,
Guerrero. Okay, yeah. Their characters are incredible. Angela Bassett as the Queen. I don't remember what her character's name is. But yeah, just this movie goes out of its way to takes the time to show you the utopia that is Wakanda, right, and how. You know, these characters are fully realized. We have, you know, conversations about with Nakia and Okoye talking about how these events impact them personally and not how they relate to like the male characters and stuff. Like it goes out of its way to fully form everybody.
Yes.
And the writing for this movie is part of what elevates it to that, you know, the important movie that it is.
Right, yeah. And this movie does really well by its female characters, specifically. I mean, Okoye is great. Shuri is great.
Yes. Oh, my God. How did I forget about Shuri?
Yeah, Shuri, I think, is the best character in this movie. She runs away with it. Yep. And she should get her own spinoff. I think she should be Iron Man.
Yeah.
easily. Yeah, it does really well by its female characters. And I think there's actually one actress, Florence Kasumba, who is one of the... I forgot the name of the army, but the female army that like Danny Guerrero leads. She's one of them, and she's also one of the Amazons in Wonder Woman.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, it's like, holy shit, you got both? Like, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
That's cool. But yeah, and I can't wait to see these characters just mixing up with the Avengers in a couple months. Like, Infinity War is right around the corner.
Yeah.
And I think Siddhanta Alaka from birthmovies.death.com tweeted, are you laughing at me because I said .com?
Specifying.com.
He tweeted out something that I thought was actually pretty insightful, which is that the best thing that the marketing for Avengers Infinity War has done is make it look like they just shoved a bunch of Avengers in a Black Panther sequel. Because in the trailers, like a lot of that movie, it looks like it takes place in Wakanda. And there's like, you know, a lot of scenes that take place. Like there's that big, like, charging movement where it's like Captain America and Bucky and Falcon and all of them. But it's also Black Panther and Okoye and like the entire army. I think M'Baku is there too, the Winston Duke's character. And they're all just charging. And it's like, holy shit, it's like we're going back to Wakanda in like 6 weeks. Like, what?
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. So that's pretty insane right there. But Shuri, I think, is the best character. Letitia Wright plays that character, and she's an awesome find. I don't think she's been in too much before Black Panther, but I'm very excited to see her future in this Marvel universe. I think she is in Infinity War, and I need like a scene of her talking to Tony Stark and Mark Ruffalo and just like dunking on all their tech.
Oh yeah, just totally roasting them. She's got to be Ironheart. Like, she has to take over for Iron Man. I that would be so fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the comics she becomes the Black Panther for a while. So that, I mean, it seems early to be talking about who could take over Black Panther when he's had one movie.
When Chadwick Boseman's contract expires in 15 years.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, at the same time, I really want to see her just like in a lot more of these movies.
I really just want the Marvel Shuri universe.
The Marvel Shuri. Yeah, if she was just a supporting character in all the Marvel movies from going forward, like, I'd be okay with it. Like,
I'm in.
Like, just a 5-minute scene where everybody gets their own, like, Shuri as Q from James Bond. Because yeah, that's what this movie does. That's what this movie does. She's Q, basically. And it's great. It's so good. But anyway, yeah, and also in this movie, Martin Freeman, which I mentioned at the start of this podcast, we're very much in favor of having more Martin Freeman in Marvel movies from this point forward. I think that's indisputed. I really love Martin Freeman just as an actor. And he's great as the kind of like Felix to T'Challa's James Bond in this in this movie.
Is this really just a James Bond movie? We didn't know about it.
It's literally, I think it's a long stretch of this movie that just plays like a James Bond movie, right? He has that Q scene with Shuri that leads into this bit at a casino and stuff like that. And it's kind of like this like spy thriller for a bit. And then it kind of transitions into being like a Game of Thrones Star Wars hybrid. And I was here for it. I was here for all that. That was a lot of fun. To watch, and I mean, it's all anchored by this dynamic between Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan, who kind of go head to head throughout really the second half of this movie. But yeah, they are so good facing off against each other, and their stories are so linked to each other that it becomes really interesting. And I feel like that's a lot of the best Marvel climaxes are ones that have villains that are tied to the hero in some way. Like, I was a big fan of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and Ego is Peter Quill's father. You know, Thor and Loki is a big deal. Like, they're brothers, obviously. And, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming had the Vulture, which actually, I will say the climax of that movie I wasn't a big fan of. But the Vulture was a good villain in that movie, though. And I feel like, having that connection to the hero does help.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah, Winter Soldier, definitely, for sure. That's the big one. How did I forget that one?
I was just trying to help, Mike.
Yeah, that's my favorite of these movies. Like, it's like, I don't know how I forgot that. But yeah, so I think that does that is certainly helpful for Black Panther here too. And yeah, Martin Freeman is great. Also, Andy Serkis in here just having an absolute blast as Ulysses Klaue. He is just being gleefully evil and so much fun to watch. He's like cackling, like driving down the street and all that stuff.
He gets to finally just be Andy Serkis, and he's like, "I'm gonna be it to the most."
Yeah, yeah. And he appeared. I mean, both these guys appeared in other Marvel movies. Freeman was in Civil War, and Andy Serkis was in Age of Ultron. But I had like almost forgotten that Circus was an Age of Ultron. Like I was like watching Black Panther, and it took like a second to remember. Like, oh yeah, there was a bit where they went to Wakanda, or they sort of go to like on the off, like they don't go into Wakanda, but they like are like right on the side of it. Like
they go to the border.
Yeah, because that's the thing. They've been teasing Black Panther for so long in these movies. You know, this is a movie. I think this goes back to like the 90s. They wanted to make a Black Panther movie. Which I feel like is the case for a lot of Marvel heroes, but I think Wesley Snipes at one point wanted to make Black Panther like for himself, and then he ended up doing Blade instead.
Oh my God! What a different world that would be.
Yeah, exactly. Right. that would be pretty wild. So that's been in development for a long time, and ever since like you know the beginning of this Marvel universe, like Black Panther was always one of the movies they had talked about. I remember in Iron Man 2, there was an Easter egg where you see like this giant map on the screen, and like one of the countries is Wakanda. And stuff like that. So it goes back as far back as that. But then, like, Avengers Age of Ultron, like, there's that bit with Ulysses Klaw and Wakanda. And then, you know, Chadwick Boseman was in Civil War. So they've been teasing Black Panther for so long. So it's nice that it's here and it is good. Like,
it lived up to the hype.
It really did. And that's, you know, saying something. Because we were talking about, you know, these cinematic universes that keep crashing and burning. And Marvel has figured out how to make good movies, and thus people will keep going to see these cinematic, like, people are interested in the cinematic universe, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and people will go see, you know, an Ant-Man and the Wasp movie because they enjoy Black Panther or something like that, you know? It's like...
Right. Which, like, I can't believe that's a thing.
Yeah.
Just, like, what characters they're picking out to make movies for and everything, it's great.
Yes, yeah.
It's so cool.
So is there any sort of general stuff more that you wanted to dig into, Mike, before we get into spoilers for Black Panther?
No, I guess we'll do spoilers.
Okay, all right, let's do it. Let's get into spoilers for Black Panther, starting right now. All right, spoilers for Black Panther starting right now. So, Mike, this weekend I watched a movie from a property owned by Disney that featured the surprising death halfway through by a villain played by Andy Serkis. But enough about Star Wars The Last Jedi, Mike. We got to talk about Black Panther.
Wow.
I've been saving that one for a while.
I'm impressed.
But yeah, so Andy Serkis is killed like halfway through this movie, which is kind of a bummer. Because like he was just so much fun to watch. And like it made sense, and like it made sense for Killmonger to do it, and it made because they had to kill him in order to bring him into Wakanda so that he would gain entryway. But still, definitely a bummer. But that was a good scene, and I think it really like cements that really cements Killmonger's villainy because he kills his girlfriend right there too.
Yeah,
like, immediately, like without even hesitating, and it's like holy shit.
He pulls a speed.
He shoots the hostage. Although in Speed, they don't shoot the hostage to kill the hostage. It's just...
Maybe they missed. We don't know.
You think Keanu Reeves is a psychopath in Speed? Actually, you're not wrong. He is. But that's why we love him. That's why we love Speed so much. But yeah, we got to talk about Killmonger because he is such an interesting character. Like as far as Marvel villains go, he's... You know, top of, like one of the best easily. The final line that he has in this movie as he's dying is so like holy shit. His line I wrote it down. It's bury me in the ocean with my ancestors who jumped from the ships because they knew death was better than bondage. And like just the way Jordan delivers that line and like just the line itself is so.
This is a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Like holy shit.
Yeah.
And they just do it. And the whole movie is that. That question, like you said, it's about the African American experience,
right?
And it's fucking, it's so good. It's handled so well.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I mean, so a lot of the movie takes place from Chadwick Boseman's perspective as Black Panther, and he is somebody who is the king of this African nation, but Wakanda is this isolated country that has not been colonialized by white people over the course of thousands of years. So it's not stripped of its resources. It is this like utopia that outpaces every other country in the world. But they're isolated and they're, alone in this one little area and they don't really go outside of it.
Well, it's a self-imposed isolation. They're protecting themselves.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. That's the idea. That's what they've been saying for thousands of years. But then, Killmonger comes in and he's like, well, I have been living, in the real world for this entire time and people who look just like us do not have it as good as you guys do.
Right.
Not nearly as much. There's a huge struggle, for Black people in America and all over the world. And so his whole plot and his performance all comes from that place. And I think, in a certain way, he's right. Right. Wakanda has the ability to help the world and they keep that technology and that knowledge to themselves.
Right.
And so that's kind of the struggle that they have between Wakanda wanting to protect itself versus Wakanda wanting to branch out and either help the world or conquer the world themselves and create a better world. And that's kind of what Killmonger wants to do. And that's kind of what Daniel Kaluuya's character ends up wanting to do in this movie. And I will say, I feel like his heel turn felt like a little rushed to me. Like, I don't know. It just felt like it was very quick.
Yeah. I mean, his character doesn't have a whole ton to do in general.
He kind of just shows up at the beginning and they have like a conversation. It's like him, Black Panther. And he's like, "Hey, I'm your best friend." And he's like, "Yeah, I know." And then we're like, and they're like talking. And then Danny Guerrero like calls in on the, like, you know, speakerphone or whatever. And the FaceTime or whatever, it's
yeah,
whatever you want to call it. And she like, and she says like, "Oh, hey, Black Panther. Hey, lover," or something like that. And it's,
yeah.
And it's like, okay, so we have that exposition out of the way. That's nice. But then you have, you know, Daniel Kaluuya, his heel turn. I mean, in that conversation with T'Challa, he's saying like, you know, maybe we need to expand our reach outside of Wakanda and that kind of thing. So it's hinted at there.
Yeah.
But for sure, I do feel like there should have been like one or two more scenes with him, just so you kind of had more of a sense of who he was. A little bit more about his relationship with Okoye might have been nice. Just because it really is just like one line where she like looks at him and says "lover," and then and then he betrays her. And it's felt like, I felt the betrayal because Danny Kaluuya and Danny Guerrero are really good actors. So, you know, and it was very satisfying when you know, he knelt to her at the end when she defeated him. That was great. But at the same time, I feel like there was just like one scene between the two of them, like earlier in the movie.
Yeah, I wish they had just done the lesbian romance that Okoye has in the comic books instead of having her call him lover once, so that they're like a couple, right?
Right.
Which they apparently cut out. Like, I remember there was some kind of big disappointment. They had talked about they cut out some scenes that furthered that, like, had a lesbian relationship instead of with a straight one. Okay. Which I don't know, it would have just, I felt like maybe it would, there would have been more of a relationship to see, because like you said, they have that one scene where they call each other lover,
right?
And that's it. To serve the plot at the end when the rhino doesn't kill her, I guess,
right?
which was awesome. That scene was dope.
That was cool.
But yeah, with Killmonger being, you know, the most interesting villain and having a point and actually making, you know, being reasonable, air quotes reasonable, not just being Ultron, I'm going to destroy the world, or, you know, one of those kind of villain comic book characters.
Right.
You know, there's so much going on in this movie. There's so many layers to things that, well, we need to see this 10 more times before I really understand what's going on. But somebody pointed out, I read an article about, you know, the duality between T'Challa and Killmonger being, you know, two sides of the same coin, right? Wakanda's role and how they use their technology to benefit the world. It's the duality between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, right?
Yeah.
Malcolm X was the more militant version of rise up and overthrow our oppressors and kill them all, where, you know, MLK is the peaceful protest and, you know, all that stuff, which is, it's so interesting to have that. Like you said, Killmonger's final line in the movie, in a Disney movie, these kind of questions and these kind of relationships and stuff happening in a tentpole blockbuster movie.
Yeah,
it's wild.
Yeah, if you're looking for subtext, somebody pointed out on Twitter a couple days ago, I forget who, that the final fight of this movie takes place on a literal underground railroad.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like what? Oh my God.
That's blow your
Ryan
mind right
Coogler,
there.
You bastard. Wow.
Yeah.
That's happened. Those things are happening.
It's
in
all
Disney
there.
Movie.
It's all there. Yeah, it's nuts. And yeah, speaking of, I mean, we talked a little bit about Dan Kaluuya's heel turn and how that felt kind of rushed. Like, there should have been like one scene at the beginning to like kind of set that up a little bit more. Yes. I will say, outside of that, I feel like this movie does a really good job of like revealing things in time, like setting stuff up in the beginning and then revealing them later on. Like the reveal, which is actually the spoiler in IMDb's synopsis, Killmonger is a childhood victim of T'Challa's father's mistake. That's what IMDb says in the synopsis. And that's a reveal in the movie, right? That's like...
Yeah, that's like a big moment.
You know, you have that prologue in the beginning where T'Chaka ends up killing these this guy, this Wakandan guy who betrayed them, but you don't know who he is, right? And he's played by Sterling K. Brown, actually, from People vs. O.J. and This Is Us. Yeah, he ends up killing this guy, and you don't know who he is, but then, like, about halfway through, Killmonger, you know, reveals himself, and Forrest Whitaker's character reveals to T'Challa that, yeah, that's actually your uncle, and Killmonger is your cousin, or... Yeah. That's what it is. It adds a lot to the movie when you know, like, you've seen that prologue and you don't really understand why it's happening. But, like, they reveal that that kid who's looking up at the building, the spaceship as it was leaving.
The spaceship, yeah.
Yeah, the spaceship as it was leaving. They reveal that that happened, that was Killmonger. Like, that's revealed, like, halfway through the movie. My entire audience, like, gasped. Like, it just legit, like, gasped at that moment. And then they all kind of laughed because they were gasping. yeah, it was... so that was a great reveal. And also, there's a bit earlier in the movie where Michael B. Jordan mentions that the bumps on his skin are scars for every person that he's killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he like... And you see, like, his arm, right, when he says that. And he's like, yeah. It's,
yeah.
And, you know, so you see, like, an arm of scars. And like, oh, that's a lot of scars. And then later on in the movie, when he's challenging Black Panther... to the feats of strength or whatever they call it, like, it's
the ritual combat.
The ritual combat. He takes off his shirt and you see he is just covered in these bumps.
Yeah,
it's like, oh shit, his entire body is these bumps. I think that's such a good reveal and it tells you so much about that character without having to say that much.
Yeah, that moment was definitely one of those, like, everyone in the theater was like, oh, like, yeah. You know, one of those moments. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this movie has a lot of that, where it's like it's able to introduce concepts without a ton of exposition. So there's a scene during that casino action scene where Shuri has to drive a virtual car, which is in control of an actual car that T'Challa is driving halfway across the world. And the movie wastes no time explaining what it is, right? They never explain to you this car can drive this car or anything like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Okoye throws a thing on top of a car, basically.
Yeah.
And then, like, a couple minutes later, we see why, and it just is like, oh, yeah, Shuri is in this virtual car now. Like, yeah. We just don't, nothing happens.
Yeah, and the movie wastes no time telling you what it is. It just trusts that you will go along with it, and you do, because it explains it visually.
Right.
Which I think is so cool. Like, that's such a nice touch for the movie. And, yeah, so that, I mean, that, as far as the action scenes go, I think that is the best one in the movie. There's the casino fight. Okoye has that awesome moment where she throws her wig at the dude, and, like, it's great.
And Nakia kills a dude with her high heel.
Yes. Awesome. So cool. And, yeah, there's this, the Ryan Coogler one take that was very prominent in Creed, where, you know, have the, you know, going around the entire casino, and it was really cool. And then it kind of leads into this car chase. Which is also very cool and has Andy Serkis cackling on the side of the window and, like, Okoye and Nakia are driving and their car basically just, like, disintegrates almost. which was very cool. So it's definitely, like, as far as the action stuff goes, that was easily the best. And then the rest of it, like, there's good action in the movie. I just feel like I was hoping for a little bit more out of it. You know what I mean? Because just based on Creed, because Creed's fight scenes are so visceral and awesome, and I was hoping for a little more like that. But you know, at the end of the day, like, Marvel action is fun. Like, it's Marvel action is fun stuff.
Yeah, he got one. He got the casino scene.
Yes, yeah.
And that's kind of it. It's in terms of, like, interesting, unique action, because there's definitely a lot of fights, obviously. But and during most of it, other than that casino scene, which is one take, there feels like there's a lot of that quick edit. We can't see who's hitting who or what, you know, any of that kind of really stuff happening.
Yeah.
Particularly the big battle scene at the end, I think.
Right, yeah.
You know.
And there's a lot of cool stuff happening at the big battle scene. I mean, you have Martin Freeman doing the virtual jet, which, again, is a nice, like, because you saw it happen, you saw that virtual technology going on earlier in the movie, you can just buy into this happening again now. And that's a cool sequence, and you have those rhinos and stuff like that. There's a lot of cool stuff happening there. Shuri has, like, laser blaster gloves or whatever, like,
foreshadowing her as Iron Man.
True, very much. I did like the ritual combat stuff, though. That was pretty cool. And it just kind of, like, introduces you to Wakandan culture very quickly, like how they are an isolationist and traditionalist place that is also, you know, mega advanced, like, beyond our wildest dreams. And so I love that, and I love Forrest Whitaker's role in that. He's basically playing his character from Rogue One again.
Oh man, I was thinking that the whole time,
up to and including the death scene, like,
yep.
Although his death was much more meaningful here than it was in Rogue One, I will say.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In Rogue One, he just kind of dies for no reason.
But a planet falls on him, though.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's true. But at the same time, like, he could have left. You know, like, I
don't ruin this, Mike.
You don't remember that in Rogue One? Do you remember that in Rogue One?
I'm just yeah.
He's like, Jin, you have to go. I'm like, you can come with me. No, I can't. And then he dies. Like, it's. But also wanted to give a shout out to M'Baku, Winston Duke, who this is his first movie.
What?
Yeah, this is his very first movie. He's also in Infinity War, which is awesome. He is fantastic. He fights Black Panther at the beginning, right? He fights Black Panther in the first ritual combat, and it's a really cool moment. It's a great characterization moment for T'Challa as he refuses to kill M'Baku. And M'Baku's also hilarious. Like, he's super funny. like he's very intimidating for a while, right? You have that ritual combat thing, and then you like go into his lair, and it's this like beautiful looking lair. It's like dark and there's logs everywhere, and it's like, why are there so many logs? And
on the side of a mountain.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then he ends up with like the funniest moments in the movie where he's like just barking at Martin Freeman for to get him to shut up. Or he says something like, I will feed you to my, to the cannibals or something. It's like, I'm just
I'll feed you to my children.
Yeah. I feed you to my children. And Martin Freeman like freaks out for a second. He's like, I'm just kidding. We're vegetarian. Like,
which, apparently someone pointed out, because, you know, each tribe sort of has their like, holy animal kind of thing. And they're gorillas, in M'Baku's tribe.
Okay.
Gorillas are vegetarian.
How about that? That's wild.
Neat little detail.
Yeah, so that's cool. So yeah, he was very funny, and I mean, literally everything Shuri did had me in stitches. She was so good. I mean, that cue scene, honestly, might have been my favorite scene in the movie, where she's just like doing the 5-minute like cue bit. She's just like rapid fire with the jokes. She has like a pretty funny bit, a bit when Martin Freeman like gets sent there to heal, and she's like, "Oh, another white boy for me to fix," like,
yep,
that kind of thing.
And she calls him Colonizer. I hope he's called Colonizer for the rest of this, like, for all of his role. Anytime he's in a Marvel movie,
yes,
someone calls him Colonizer.
Yeah, that was great. I also loved. I mean, I think the funniest moment in the movie, I think, is when she sees T'Challa's shoes, and she's like, she screams like, "What are those?" And, like. It was great. It was great. And then she gives him these sneakers, or she gives him like these like stealth shoes. And she's like, I call them sneakers because, you know, they sneak. She's really funny. And I'm very excited that she's going to be in Infinity War as well.
That's all.
Yeah, that's about it. No, we should talk about the post-credit scenes also. So, yeah, I feel like they weren't as big as the post-credit scenes for previous Marvel movies. I mean, you watched both of them, I assume, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So there was the first post-credit scene, which, you know, is Wakanda revealing itself to the world. And that's fine, but it also feels like we already knew it was doing that. Like, it kind of feels like a little repetitive. The movie already, like, the movie ends, and it's already, like... You know, they're already, like, showing these kids in California, like, the Wakandan spaceship. They're going to open a Wakandan embassy. And they even say, like, point blank, like, I'm going to start opening up Wakanda to the world. And and then the post-credit scene is them at the UN doing just that. And it's fine. It's a nice scene. It also feels like it could have been part of the movie itself. Like, it didn't have to be a post-credits.
Yeah. It feels like it's in there just to sort of mirror Iron Man, right? The kind of I am the Iron Man press conference kind of thing.
I can see that.
Which I thought was neat. I thought it was also a cool idea just to have or a cool opportunity to have Chadwick Boseman with his just beautiful shit-eating grin. When the other delegates like, what does a nation of farmers have to offer the world?
Right.
And it's just like, oh, you don't even know.
Yes. Yeah, that was cool. And then there's the second post-credit scene, which is more pertinent to the Marvel Universe as a whole. Bucky Barnes, man, the Winter Soldier, shows up again.
The other broken white boy.
The other broken white boy, yeah, that she's obviously referring to in that line, yeah. So yeah, a little cameo from Sebastian Stan there. And yeah, I feel like this doesn't really add too much to his to his story or anything. Last time we saw him was in the post-credits of Civil War, where he was going to Wakanda. He went under the ice for a while, and there was like, all right, you guys are going to heal him. I'm out. Captain America, peace. And... and so yeah, this kind of shows him like exiting a hut. They call him White Wolf, which is a comics term from what I understand. I guess there's a bit in the comics where Bucky Barnes just hangs out with Wakanda for a while and is called the White Wolf, and he's like a superhero fighting alongside Black Panther.
Okay, so that's cool.
So I mean, based on that and literally nothing else, I could totally see a future in these movies where, you know, people have predicted that, like, you know, Sebastian Stan will take over the role of Captain America because he's done that in the, like, Bucky did that in the comics for a while.
Right.
And I've always maintained that I would rather that not happen because I don't think Sebastian Stan is that interesting.
Yeah. I'd rather have Falcon Cap.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much, the movies have done so much more with Falcon as a character that I feel like he's the more likely choice, the more obvious choice. So what I think, based on literally nothing other than the fact they called him White Wolf in this post-credit scene, is that in the future, after Chris Evans leaves, Anthony Mackie will take over as Cap, and Sebastian Stan will be a supporting player in Black Panther movies.
I'm in. Sign me up.
Yeah, that would be cool. I would be into that. So, yeah, but the scene also seems to imply that Bucky's getting better. You know, he's recovering from all his from all the shit, which is nice. You know,
that's good. You know, honestly, it's two things, I guess. I'm refreshed to see or to not see just a scene from the next movie be the post credit scene, because I feel like since Winter Soldier, maybe they've been doing that.
That's happened a couple of times.
I mean, not every movie, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, it happened. The end of Doctor Strange it was a clip from Thor Ragnarok, and then at the end of Ant Man was a clip from Civil War.
That might have been it, yeah.
Yeah, but otherwise, I mean, that was it. So, yeah, I mean, it has happened a couple of times, and you're right. I prefer when it is, like, an actual scene shot for this movie, just for the credits, as opposed to just grabbing a clip from, you know, Thor and shoving it into the end of your Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah. But then the other takeaway is not takeaway TT, no. No. I made a joke literally just for myself. I honestly thought that this movie, or originally thought that Black Panther was going to directly set up and lead into Infinity War.
Oh, really?
Okay. And it doesn't at all. I mean, that, like, just what I was looking at, you know, the schedule and how close these movies come out together and all this stuff, you know, knowing that Bucky is there, right, from the other post-credit scene from Civil War. I thought it was going to be about Bucky and Infinity Stones and setting up Infinity War or something, or have something to do with that. And it doesn't at all, which is cool and interesting. And I'm not sure, like, why, if that affects anything, like, what, you know, what, how they're going to, if it would have been different, what they could have done, if it would have been cool if Black Panther set up Infinity War directly.
Okay.
But I don't know. I just wanted to, do you have a take on them not involving any of that stuff?
I'm glad they didn't. Yeah, I feel like, you know, this is the first solo Black Panther movie. It should just be a Black Panther movie, you know? Yeah. I feel like there is stuff in this movie that will come into play in Infinity War. I do think, because I think there's one Infinity Stone that's not accounted for, and I think the ancestral juice or whatever that they use might be that, you know? Like, there might be a stone out of that or something. I think it's the soul gem, and that seems like that would fit that gem's MO or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there is stuff in this movie that could come into play in Infinity War. But what I don't want them to do, like, movies that just set up other movies, you know, that's the thing. So that was the problem with Iron Man 2. That's a problem a lot of people have with Age of Ultron. I think Age of Ultron has a lot more going for it than just that. But that is, you know, a concern for sure. And I feel like Marvel has done a good job of making these movies feel standalone and then have those standalone movies build up to something, right? So with something like Civil War, you had Black Panther introduced in that movie, and he has his own arc in that movie. He has his own plot line, and, you know, it's all informing the major plot line of the movie, the overall plot, but he has his own story and his own arc, and that does lead into this Black Panther movie. But if you just watch Civil War on your own, that's a solid, like, solo Black Panther story right there. You know what I mean?
Right.
As opposed to, like, I do think Civil War does kind of shove Spider-Man in there just because, but, like...
they were just so pumped that deal worked.
Yeah,
or went through.
Like, yeah, and, you know, it worked out because Spider-Man was great in that movie. But, like, and it is, like, you know, it's sort of like if you were coming at that movie and had never seen any Marvel movies before, which when I saw Civil War, I was with somebody who had not seen any Marvel movies before, and he was on board. You know, he was on board with the Spider-Man stuff, on board with the Black Panther stuff. You know, on board, and despite, you know, not having seen the previous Captain Americas, the previous Iron Mans, like, Civil War works on its own, at least from his perspective, despite having not had seen any of them. And he went back and watched all of them afterwards because he loved Civil War so much. So, yeah, I mean, there is that. And I actually saw Black Panther with somebody who had not seen any of these movies before because I have lame friends, I guess. And
apparently.
And, yeah, I mean, she enjoyed it. Like, it seemed like she enjoyed it.
At least lied to you about it.
At least lied to me about it, which is all I can ask for, really. But it was easy to understand. Like, Black Panther is a movie that you don't need to see Civil War to get this one. Because it does, like, recap the stuff that happens in Civil War. It recaps the fact that the UN exploded and T'Chaka died in that explosion.
Right.
But for the most part, it's pretty standalone, so you should be able to enjoy it on its own. This is all a long way of saying I'm glad that it doesn't really directly set up Infinity War, because I think it probably does set up Infinity War in ways that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah, that is a good point to make. You're probably right. We're going to have our minds blown when it's revealed that the Rhino was inside us all along or some shit.
The Rhino that is part of Black Panther's army, or the Rhino, the Spider-Man villain?
Could be both.
Could be Paul Giamatti as as the Rhino.
It would have been amazing if there was a credit that said the Rhino, Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti did the mocap for the rhinos in this movie as like an in-joke. I would love that.
Yes,
I'd love that so much.
That'd be great.
But yeah, otherwise, any other thoughts on Black Panther, Mike? Any final thoughts before we wrap this up? I mean, any thoughts about the future of the Marvel Universe with Black Panther in it? I feel like this is going to be, you know, we talked about when Spider-Man Homecoming came out, the Spider-Man might be like the new face of the Marvel Universe, but honestly, like, Black Panther's so successful, it might be Black Panther.
and it would be awesome if it was. I look forward to Black Panther, the success of Black Panther makes me excited for, what is it, Phase 4, I guess? Like, the new Avengers stuff they might, you know, that we don't know anything about yet, but as the kind of original crew of Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Hemsworth and everybody, I mean, I don't know about Chris Hemsworth, what his status is, but, you know.
Like, he's going to stick around for a while, which is
nice. Yeah, but, you know, as these, the people that were there at the very beginning, as their contracts start expiring and they start, I guess, get tired of making every dollar and start phasing out of these movies.
Yeah.
To see, you know, who could take the prominent role of Black Panther or Spider-Man or Ironheart with Shuri for Ironheart 2018. you know what I mean? Just to see these kind of new characters rise up and take important parts in these movies is exciting.
Yeah, no, in a few years, we could be seeing an Avengers movie with Black Panther, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Like, it could be like...
Yeah,
you know,
could be anything.
Those characters could just be an Avengers movie by themselves, and, you know, it could work. That's the thing.
Yeah, that would be so much fun.
I would be into it, yeah. So, and Infinity War, I mean, it looks massive. I mean, it looks just insane. I'm really excited about it. I mean, the Russos, of course, did Winter Soldier and Civil War, which are two of the best Marvel movies, in my opinion. And they, with Civil War, they showed an ability to juggle a whole lot of characters at once. So I think they'll be able to do it for Infinity War. My worry is that Killmonger is so good of a villain that it's going to make Thanos look lame.
Oh, wow.
In comparison.
Yeah. Because it's just another, I'm going to kill everybody.
Right.
Thing probably.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, what I've heard is that Thanos is almost like the main character of Infinity War.
Whoa.
Which, like, hey, that could be interesting. That could be a good...
From a certain perspective, it's the Avengers who are evil.
That's a good Anakin reference. Well done.
Thanks. Thanks.
But yeah, I think that honestly is probably a decent way to go, because, I mean, Thanos is a villain that they've been building up for a long time, who, like, he's made his first appearance in a movie 6 years ago, and we've seen maybe a collective 3 minutes of screen time with Thanos at most. You know, we really don't know that much about him other than he's big and purple and wants Infinity Stones. And for the most part, he likes sitting in a chair. Like...
Just like every one of us, Mike.
Who among us doesn't want to gather all the Infinity Stones to bend the world to our will? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And sit in a chair.
Exactly. If I can do it while sitting in a chair, all the better. But yeah, so I think Thanos, I mean, as Josh Brolin's a good actor, and I think he'll do good work with Thanos. I think visually, from the trailer at least, Thanos looks a little weird.
Yeah.
Like, he just kind of looks like, I think somebody pointed out that he looks like a purple Hank Hill from King of the Hill, and now I can't really see it.
Oh my God. Somebody also pointed out, too, that he's always in full plate armor while sitting in his chair, but when he comes to invade Earth, just give me a tank top.
Yeah, that's true. Well, he wants them to think he's like a casual, like, fun-loving guy, you know, as he's going to murder all of them. but anyway, yes. Yeah, so I think that about wraps up our thoughts on Black Panther and Thanos' tank top. we were both big fans. We're not the only ones. This movie made a shitload of money. You probably saw it already, but if you didn't, go see it. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to Film Bookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike Tacricio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now join us for the next episode of Film Bookcast, where we have a few options on the table, Mike, but I think we're probably going to want to talk about Annihilation.
Yeah,
that's the big one right now. It's Alex Garland's new movie, the guy who made Ex Machina. It's getting phenomenal reviews across the board. I'm hearing like 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Whoa.
Yeah, like I'm hearing it's a head trip. Like it's one of the trippiest, like boldest, craziest sci-fi movies in recent years. So I'm very excited to see what Annihilation has in store. I don't even really know what the plot is. I've seen the trailer a couple times. I know it's like Natalie Portman searching for her husband or something, but outside of that, like,
yeah,
I really know nothing. So I'm very excited about that. And we'll probably also be talking the Oscars too. I think those will have happened by the time we record that episode. So that, look forward to that. And then you can check out our next Complete Works, where we're talking Nicolas Cage's role in 2009's G-Force.
Oh boy.
Truly the height of Nicolas Cage's career. thanks so much for listening, guys. We are out.